This episode is brought to you by Gin & Co., author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security, free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds. Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B, author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co. at dannyv.com.au. Welcome to the Words and Nerds Podcast, where we bring literary goodness straight to your ears. Today, I'm super excited to welcome Kate Temple, author of the Underdogs Bin Chicken series, The Bird Has Arms, Bush Turkey Goat, which I just love so much. I wish I'd written that. That's pretty awesome. Every time I look at it, I'm like, such a great idea. And the new book, Frog Squad, co-authored, of course, with Joel Temple. And you've also got the wonderful Trilby Moffat series, which my daughter is a huge fan of as well. I love it when my daughter, because she's not a huge reader, when she brings home books of people I know, I get really excited. So welcome, Kate.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Thank you very much, Danny. I've been looking forward to this chat, and that's great to hear that your daughter brought Trilby home.
She did. She was just reading in bed. She's like, oh, can I read? And I'm like, sure. And I'm like, oh, that's Trilby.
Yeah, nice.
It was a nice surprise.
So. Yeah, well, my kids are getting a little bit older now, so I'm always thrilled when they will read one of our books as well. So that was a nice surprise when I saw our grade six finish the two Trilbies as well.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. And she's not a big reader. My son just eats books for breakfast, but she's very picky. So
yeah, it's funny how they're different, isn't it? They just follow their own little reading journey.
Yeah, that's right. She'd rather just be, you know, hanging upside down and doing things like that than reading. So we all have our thing. We all have our thing. Now, we're going to go on a bit of a journey today. Listeners have actually asked for more sort of talk about publishing and the industry and people's experiences. So we're going to do just that. And who knows where we'll go, Kate, who knows, but
let's go on a journey.
Go on a journey. So buckle up, people, take your dog for a long walk.
I don't even know what's going to happen. This is exciting. I feel like I'm at the beginning of one of those rides at Jamboree that my children make me go on and I hate.
I never really
like
know.
That, I'm not going to get wet and it's going to be fun.
Well, like I said, don't know what's going to happen. I generally don't know what's going to happen. I pretend that I've got these questions, which I do, and I never read them. So, you know, I just get distracted. So I want to ask you, because I find this really interesting, and I was speaking to Belinda Morell the other day, who has been 19 years with the one publisher, which is cool, but there's also another side to that where you particularly, and I know some others, who are published with a variety of publishers. Now, I know when we had this chat, some people think it's not the done thing, but people do it, and you do it, so talk me through this. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, it is an interesting thing, and I know a number of authors who are also with one publisher, and that works out really well for them. I think a lot of it had to do with how we got started. Yeah, and you know, when you get started, you're really happy to get your first book published, and we found a really great publisher for that. And after that, they're not necessarily, you know, the book did well, but maybe they don't want to take your next book. So for a whole host of reasons, they might have something else in the pipeline that's similar, or they've tried something like that. And that happened to us. So that was the impetus for us moving to a different publisher initially. And I think we didn't know any different. And that, I think, is an advantage sometimes, not knowing what's supposed to be done. and So we just navigated our way through that. And the next thing that sort of, it meant that when you had a rejection, that it wasn't the end of the world. So maybe somebody else would like that book. And I think that's always, as time's gone on and we ended up having more books, we found that we were getting to know what we were writing as well, what kind of books we were writing and what kind of work we wanted to put out. So it ended up that we had it quite segmented, really. So Scholastic pretty much publish our picture books, so the Bin Chicken and Bush Turkey books and Goat, and we love working with them. And so we've also had junior fiction published with different publishers. Some of it's to do with the people you work with as well. Like maybe you've developed really good relationships, and then they move. So that's another factor that can come up. And there's a lot of lovely people that we've worked with, and sometimes they do go to different places, and you don't want that to be the end of your relationship with them. So I think it's worked out for us because we also bring out a lot of work, and we bring out a lot of work across different genres. I mean, there's two of us, so there's more work that's being produced. But I think if you want to bring out different kinds of work, picture books, junior fiction, middle grade, there's a good reason perhaps to have them in different homes. They're different kinds of work. And also Trilby isn't written by Joel, so that's nice for me to have something in a different place that's separate to the work that I do with Joel.
Yeah, and that was interesting too. So tell me about that. You've done a lot of work together. Trilby, you on your own. I believe Joel's working on something on his own as well.
Yeah, he's always working on something on his own, but mostly it's some Star Wars 1:32 scale model. But yes, he has a lot of ideas.
That's the problem with being creative, isn't it? You get a lot of ideas.
Yeah,
So
it's
tell
the
me
problem with
about.
him being creative, that's for sure.
I feel like that's my problem too. I've got a lot of ideas. Not all of them are great, but they take up a lot of brain space.
Or a lot of cupboard space.
Yeah, a lot of cupboard space, shelf space, particularly with that stuff. So tell me how Trilby came about, and obviously you're navigating a professional personal relationship with your co-author. So how does that come up when you're like, I'm just going to do this?
Yeah, that is such an interesting thing because I have in the past been asked a lot about that. And I find it really amazing that people will be like, was he jealous? Was that a problem? And I think, what are those kind of creative relationships where that happens? Because actually, when you work creatively with someone, and it's a collaboration, you're really happy for them to do other work.
Absolutely.
And when they go out and they do something like that, that grows them, and then that grows your work. So, I mean, of course, Joel he loves the book Trilby, and it was also useful to have an author, who you have that relationship with, because it was someone who knew what I was working on, who I, when I was stuck, I could say, oh, and he'd be able to offer, why don't you go over there? Why don't you try this? So, having that relationship for writing a book by myself for the first time was great, but it's a positive thing to do something, that develops you and tests you as a creative. So it's always been something that he'll write something by himself at some point that is something I wouldn't write, and that would be great when that happens too. He's time poor
No, I really like that. And you write books together, obviously, but you're obviously two individual people as well who have their own output as well. So I love that idea that you can work together and then go outside of that and then come back and do all of those things, because that's exactly what all creative collaboration should be, I think. But what I wanted to touch on was what you just said, is that it's really cool to have someone in the industry in that relationship with you, because otherwise, because I don't know, being creative, I feel like you're always thinking about creative stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like work for me, but I'm talking about books or ideas or publishing or whatever, whatever. It feels like it's exciting. And when you're in a relationship with someone who isn't part of that world, I mean, obviously it works, people do it, but I feel like it's really enjoyable to have that other creative person in your life where you can just continually bounce off ideas whilst going about
Yeah.
your life. Do you feel
Yeah,
like that's a real
absolutely.
positive?
Yeah, definitely, and that's also something that we have with our kids too, because they're around that kind of conversation about books and publishing and ideas. And so we get a lot of stuff now that they're a bit older from them, you know, like they will have ideas around something that we've made. Well, usually a lot of criticisms.
Oh, yes. Little baby criticisms.
A lot of them. Yeah, there's a lot of feedback going on. And that's terrific. But it is something that's like we talk about it. We talk about books a lot. We talk about ideas a lot. And particularly, you know, when people say, well, how do you actually write a book together? You know, and some people are quite literal about it. You know, like, do you take the right side of the keyboard as he got the left side?
Yes, just, that's like, exactly what I do. This happen? Don't try and use P, Joel. That's on my side.
Spacebar on the weekend. No, so I feel like that is that conversational stuff is actually working, you know, particularly when it comes to picture books, because our approach to picture books is we don't ever say, oh, we need to write a new picture book, what should it be about? Because I wouldn't know. We wait until they've come to us. They wait until an experience has popped up and you're like, oh, that would make a great book. And a lot of that's conceptual, so having conversations about things is a great way of unearthing those, you know, getting that concept and then hanging the story off them.
But it's an authentic way to create, you know, because I feel like when you go to a writer's group, they're great, but you've got to be creative right then and there. And sometimes you'll be in the mood and you'll be on fire. Sometimes you'll be like, I got no ideas.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, you know, having that relationship with someone who's always there with you, because you can dip in and out of it. You know, you can do other stuff and talk about other stuff, and you get an idea, and then this idea becomes this bigger thing because you can both contribute to it. So I love hanging out with creative people who are always sort of willing to talk shop, if you like, because it doesn't feel like shop, it just feels like creativity, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's so nice about catching up with author and illustrator friends. Mm. And also, if you are aware of their projects, it's nice to not have to get all the backstory. You can just immediately go, okay, so tell me, how is that romance novel set in, you know, south of France going? I'm already up to date with all the
characters. Yeah. The beauty of social media.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Just sort of know what everyone's up to. And then when you catch up, they're like, oh, I loved your book cover. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I was not a social media person. I very much am now because of that exact thing. It's a really valuable way of keeping in touch with what other creatives are doing. That's an ongoing, I feel like an ongoing dialogue with a lot of creatives. Yeah. But also letting, you know, being a part of the community in terms of like librarians, teachers, readers. I mean, they're an adult audience that are on, you know, our Instagram, but they're the people that are, you know, that are getting the books and, you know, putting them in kids' hands.
Yeah. And community, particularly, you know, author community is really strong and important, and I should, you know, illustrators as well. But the KidLit community, I feel like, is particularly strong. In Sydney as well, like Melbourne as well, but Sydney has a really strong sort of community of authors and creatives, and I just think it's such a wonderful space. And I went to Amor's book launch the other day, and there were a lot of creatives there, and we had a photo together, and we're like, look what happens in the KidLit community. Yep. You know, everyone goes out of their house and supports everybody, and you see that, you know, every time there's a book launch or an event, you just see people coming to the table, and it's just such a joyful thing.
I think it's because she serves all those jelly worms.
That could be it.
She bribes them with all the lollies.
And I had a fake tattoo. I'm always up for a fake tattoo.
Oh yeah, fake tattoo.
And a shower cap.
I saw on the Instagram and the fortune teller.
Yes, so I'm scared of fortune tellers. Good. That's a bit of a tip about me. I'm scared of fortune tellers, and I refuse to go to them because I'm just have this weird fear about them. So I stayed away from Charmaine as much as I love her.
Yes.
I waved and said, "You look gorgeous," but I'm not going to those cards. Instead, I got a free shower cap, which I wore, and I love a shower cap. So whenever I go to the hotel, they're the first things I steal. And I've been using this shower cap, Nat Amor, all week. So thank you for my gift.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's a very supportive community of creatives.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Actually, also the quality is very high.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just so, I don't know, someone, like you said before, people always ask about, oh, you know, how do you do this and how do you do that? But I've never met a community where we're doing the same thing, but we're also supportive of each other. You know, there's no, oh my God, someone's got success. We're all like cheering for them. And I think it's because we know how hard it is to get a book published.
Yeah,
I think so, but cheering.
You know, like, I think that is also the nature of creatives generally,
yeah,
in other, yeah, fields as well. And, you know, I also, it grows the pie to,
yeah,
the of other people, and
right,
it's good for your own practice. It's a much more enriching experience to be interested in other people's work,
yeah,
curious about how they do it. The conversations you'll have with those creatives, some people you don't see that often, you know, when, you know, when we bump into Tristan in, you know, various different states, we always catch up with Tristan Banks, and I'm always, you know, learning from those conversations,
yeah,
about the, he writes different stuff to us, but you know, the influences and how he's putting his stories together. And, you know, there's a number of people like that that you, you have that with. And yeah, it's a, that's a lifelong journey. That's,
yeah, I agree. And not only if you learn something from people that you just hang out with, that's amazing, but it's just interesting. You know, it's people's processes and the books they put out, or the things that don't work, or the things that they thought would work and didn't, or the things they didn't think would work and did. Like, that's with creativity as well. You never quite know if it's going to hit the mark, you know, so it's always that risk of, I've created this thing from nothing, I've put all myself into it, now the world owns it.
Yeah, I think you also get to have a bit more of an insight into that writing process, particularly if you're getting started, or if you're not sure if the thing that is your experience is common. I know we went to an event a little while ago, and people were talking about on this panel about how everyone had been told, though it was about picture books, everyone had been told never present illustrations with your manuscript. That's the rule. Don't do that. And that is exactly the opposite of what we did. You know, we'd come up with the idea for our first book and our second book, and actually all our books, it ended up being with all of this kind of this vision of what the story would be, who would illustrate it. And we like to work collaboratively with illustrators as well. So I don't want them to be so far away and, you know, just have notes sent to them. And, you know, to me, it's part of this, the same way that we, Joel and I, work together. That's the, you know, they do their thing. They've got those skills that we don't have, but it's really, and it's great and surprising to see what they come back with. But at the same, at the beginning, it's really nice to be able to talk about what did you see and how can we make this a great thing. But yeah, that it was news to me that is not a thing you do. And I don't think that there has to be really hard and fast rules about that, because if you do find you've got some great illustrations, or you've got someone in mind, the amount of times that a publisher says, do you know anyone who could illustrate this, is unbelievable. Like, they're looking for illustrators too.
Yeah, so that's true.
Why not put them, you know, the person you'd like to work with forward?
Yeah, and I think what I've learned about publishing is there are these expectations and rules, etc. But if you see a good story, or if you really want to work with someone, all those rules kind of go by the wayside, because you're like, this is a great story, or I really want to work with this person. And so I think, yeah, most of the time, you know, sometimes particularly submitting manuscripts or whatever, follow the guidelines. But you know, I think if there's a great story and a great person.
Definitely don't like totally break the rules. Like, don't like turn up outside their office and like with a flat white. Hi. Like, don't
actually
do that.
If you want to turn up with a hot chocolate, I'm open to that.
Yeah.
But I like
some things. But just the normal social, you know, rules.
Yeah. But I like how you sort of push back against like that collaboration, because I know from some experiences, people, they don't even have anything to do with their illustrator. They'll submit their work, then the publisher will be the in-between person and go back and forth and in between. And I do understand that. It's to sort of keep that, you know, publisher oversight, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But coming from the perspective of a small publisher, the collaboration is just so much fun. And I think you get so much more out of it. And I think probably that's the benefit of being part of a small publisher, is that you can break any rule you want.
Yeah, because you're agile. Yeah, that's absolutely the case. There may not be a need to know the if the reason you want to talk to the illustrator is because you'd like to tell them what to do, then it's not
That's not
then
gonna
you don't need
work.
to talk to the illustrator. But if you want to talk to the if you had an idea initially and you worked on it together, or you brought it to them and said, "We love you for this. Have you got some thoughts about it? How do you feel about it?" And then you took that in, that's a different thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and it's really
But
rewarding,
if
you
you're
know?
like, can I have their number?
Because
I have
I've
no.
got 4,000 illustrator notes. That's not going to work for anyone.
Oh.
I actually prefer not to put a lot of illo notes in because I want to see that
Yeah.
thing that I can't do, which is this amazing creativity, particularly with picture books. You get that second layer of story over your story, and you get it back, and you're like, wow, this is
Yeah.
cool, and things that are unexpected, and you know, things that weren't even in the manuscript are now shining on the page.
Totally. I absolutely agree with that. In Goat,
I
where we were
love
working with
Goat.
the fabulous Rebel Challenger,
Love
that
Rebel.
was exactly the case because we just knew we loved her work. So, you know, there's no need to be prescriptive because, you know,
She's gonna do
yeah, she's
it.
amazing and she's going to do a great job. I think more it's more the top line thing about sort of saying this is the vision that we had. Is that a vision that you have to share, or do you have something else that we could kind of come together on? That's more what I'm interested in. And then from there, the execution of that is that's what people have those skills for. That's different.
It's about trusting too, you know, like you said, you loved Rebel's work, and you know, I've just worked with Jules Faber on a
Oh,
JFIC,
he's
and
terrible.
I
Terrible.
know I wanted the terriblest illustrator for my first JFIC, but because we'd been mates for a while, so I did have to sort of, you know, sort of pitch him and go, I think he'd be perfect for this book, blah 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 blah. And you know, we always wanted to work with Jules, but it was just that thing of like, we know each other. You know what I'm about. Here's the manuscript. Just do what you do. And you know, there's trust in that. There's a little bit of fear in that as well. But there's trust in that. And then when he came back and said, here are the characters, it was like he'd taken them out of my brain but made them better.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're in safe hands there. I mean, that's working with, someone with those kind of skills. That's one of the delightful things, seeing what they come up with.
And so it was just like, yeah, go, do it. You know, I'm not going to give you any notes. I just want you to, who am I to give Jules Faber notes? Like, what a joke.
Give him some notes.
Yeah, nah, I'll pass. And then,
Brave, you'd be a brave woman.
I just think I'd be a bit full of myself. Oh, Jules
Yeah.
Faber, here, who are you? No, nobody. So, I didn't give him anything, and he just nailed it. And then what I
Amazing.
found amazing with Jules is when we went through the roughs, and you'd go, oh, I think, you know, that dad's actually wearing a different, you know, piece of clothing. He'd just be like, oh, cool, hang on. And 5 seconds later, he'd be like this, and I'm like, how did you just do that? You
Incredible.
just like redraw it in 5 seconds. I'm like, yeah, that's right. Like, it was such a weird, amazing experience. So what was it like with Rebel? Because we've worked with Rebel before. She's just such a talented human.
Oh, so amazing. I just love, I mean, this book, Goat's written entirely in it's got no descriptions. The whole thing's a conversation.
I
So
love
that
Goat.
was, yeah, so it just had to really these characters were they were talking. So she does a lot of fabulous animated sort of things. So and it needed to feel really vibrant because it's a game. It's a wordplay game. So that's the whole it needs the tone needs to come across in the pictures and she's done a great job of that. I just love those emails where it's like here are the roughs. And you're like, okay, great. Yeah, no, that was really good.
And the
And as
cover's
I say,
magnificent of Goat. Like, it's just gorgeous. I love it so much.
the best bit was though, I was walking down Victoria Road and Lynx, the this what is the deodorant, the like teenage boy deodorant, they had bought this massive billboard and they brought out a fragrance called Goat, which had
Oh,
the exact same gold lettering. And it was on Victoria Road, and I live quite near there. And it was up huge. I mean, they would spend like, 300, 400 $1,000 on this billboard that said goat, and then there was this can of
deodorant.
That's
fabulous.
And I was like, I had such this sort of suffer from this kind of weird sort of phantasma, because I walked down the street and I saw it and I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they've done that. That's so amazing. Like, that was my first thought.
Optimism. I love that, Kate.
$1 million Optimism. On an outdoor campaign for a picture book. I was like, that's what's going on. And I was like, no, that's not. That's for links. But for a moment there, I was like, yeah, of course that's what's
happening. I've made it. I love that. One day you'll have your billboard, Kate.
It's not
too far from the future, definitely. I reckon.
For all of them, for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wait. I'll stand in front of them all and take a selfie.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to talk about humor. I have a question. I have so many questions. Humor's really hard. I think people take humor and kids' books, sometimes they sort of might take it for granted and go, oh, it's just a funny book. But I think humor, particularly being funny for kids when you're an adult, because I know that my kids find my jokes pretty lame, it's a tough gig, right? And writing humor is really tough. So tell me how you do it. Do you have strategies? Are you just a naturally funny person? Do you need to be a naturally funny person?
Yeah, look, I was listening to an author talk about authenticity in writing the other day, and they were saying that Holly Ringland, actually, and she was saying that she needed to write from a place of love in the first draft to find that authenticity, which I thought was really interesting. And it made me reflect on how we use humor. Because for me, writing for kids, it's the same kind of thing. If I can find that funny in a first draft, if the book is laugh out loud, if I'm going in to annoy Joel with, oh, I've written the funniest joke here, like if that's what's going on, then it feels like it's from a very real place, because you can't fake that. That's something that you're feeling delighted. And of course, there's all the work that goes into the book and the architecture and the character design and the plotting, but those moments of humor to me make me know that a kid will respond to that book, and if you find it that hilarious, they will find it that hilarious. So and I think what humor does really that's so important with kids books is it will have a reluctant reader will reach up for something that's funny. But also a reader who is more advanced than that, it will also go back to read something that's fun.
Absolutely.
So you have this much broader range of kids that will connect with your work. And I've seen that so many times, those kids who are going, oh, I read, you know, I'm going to read Underdogs, but they'll read Trilby, even though that's a much older book, because it's funny. Yeah. So it's very
really
powerful
interesting thing, but it's really true. Yeah, and I'm thinking about my son who's 11. Like I said, he eats books for breakfast and he reads everything. The last time he bought a book home from the library, it was all of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. It was like a brick. So I'm just going to read this. I'm like, okay, you do that. But I also see he still reads Wimpy Kid over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's funny, and it is really funny. And so I think you're right about humor has a broad range.
Yeah, definitely pro those books, like the Wimp. I've got a son who reads Wimpy Kid over and over and over, and he's got every book in the house. So. Yours would as well. You know, it's just the nature of having parents who write. But there is, my view is that you can't become an ambitious reader from a standing start.
Yeah.
And books like Wimpy Kid, if that's your comfort read, those kind of books allow you to have a momentum. And if you've got a momentum, then we can talk.
Yeah.
You know, then you'll try something. Then we can do that. If you're not reading anything, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, I agree.
So to me, it's, you know, an opportunity to slide something in if you're reading Wimpy Kid on repeat. Obviously it'd be great to read other things, but if you're doing that, then we've got something to work with.
I agree, and I think reading for pleasure is the first thing you've got to do. You've got to read to love it. You know, I'd hate it if my kids came home and said, oh, I've got to read this book for school and I hate it. You know, you've got to start with reading for pleasure, and then, you know, like you said, you can read all sorts of things for pleasure.
Yeah,
And that's how
absolutely. I mean, some of those texts for school, we had Black Beauty. It's a very difficult book. Very difficult book. There's a lot of old language in it. Very difficult for this generation because they're even further away from what they're used to. If that's the only thing you're reading, that's going to be very difficult. I also think that there is a comfort and an importance in finding comfort in reading books that
Yeah,
is
totally.
so important for just self-regulating. And I don't think there's anything good that comes from shaming a kid from
Or an
finding
adult, I
for
know there's,
anyone. Like, just
yeah,
nothing good comes from
that's
shame
right.
anyway. But, like, it's sort of having good books and bad books,
Or literary books, and then, people have always, not these days, but there was a time when people looked down on romance, and romance has been supporting our industry for a really long time because it's really popular.
Well, also a lot of that stuff's really gendered too, because if it's a sport book, it's not so much of an issue. But we have that with so many things, and it's definitely speaks to that kind of, why it's okay to go to a Foo Fighters concert, but Taylor Swift is somehow not, like, that sort of discussion is, that's just not the case. So, and I think the same thing happens a lot with humor. It gets seen somehow by some as sort of a junk food version of literature, and it is far from that. It is to be able to hold engagement for kids with humor. It is the thing that allows you to insert really serious ideas. Big themes can come through humor. Those kind of things are difficult to write about in just a straight, if you're just staring straight into the sun. So, yeah, I mean, people have woken up to that, but there are still pockets where you'll encounter
I still think there needs to be more work though, because I think, I think that books that are didactic and teachable, they're great. I own many for my kids, because important issues in the world you want them to know about. But
it.
I've always owned as many funny books because I think, like you say, they're so important. Just, and even if, if they have those serious messages in them, yes, if they don't, it's still okay to enjoy a book, and it's still as important, particularly during COVID, I felt when we were just all at home all the time with our kids, I wanted them to read really fun books, for their mental well-being and for their enjoyment and for their escape, because at the time the world was pretty scary for them. And so I think when you think about books of humor in that way, I just think they're so much more important than people have given them
Oh, definitely. I
credit.
mean, it's also where you can, you develop your critical thinking skills. But that humor is relying on you to see the world a little bit differently and ask, is something other than what's being presented behind this? So, that's really important. Can I say something about Frog Squad while we're talking
Please.
humor? But that's also what was I was thinking. What we were thinking too with Frog Squad, because I mean, it's a really it's an early reader, and it's really it's a funny one, but we were writing these books, and we're trying to think of those brain breaks that kids need at school. So we got sort of to that point of, like, act one is done, and we thought, what would happen if you were th at this point you would have a commercial break? And so we were like, so let's write a commercial break. So we put these froggy commercials in them, and Joel's background is in advertising, right? He writes a creative in an advertising agency before he's writing kids' books. So we wrote ridiculous commercial breaks. Like, we wrote ridiculous, perfume commercial breaks, like
Love that, called Swamp.
for Swamp, yeah,
Love it.
the new fragrance. We wrote, like, these, we created all these ridiculous brands, Blowfly Burgers, this sort of thing. But that is exactly that kind of thing where you're going, okay, well, that's ridiculous. But also, what it does is make a kid think about how we receive media. What is an ad? What is all that persuasive language? It starts a conversation around that. And then you can also say, well, let's write our own ads. And what do you need to write one of those? And how are you spoken to? So all of those kind of conversations come out of something as silly as, you know, writing fake frog ads.
I love that. Frogrance is now, it's my favorite thing now.
And he's so snarly, that frog. Like, he's one of those French models.
It's, it's fantastic. I love it a lot. But I mean, part of humor is breaking stereotypes. Part of humor is giving the reader something unexpected. And all of those things, like you said, are developing that critical thinking, are allowing you to see the world in a broader way than what you perhaps would have before.
Yeah, absolutely.
I find that really interesting. I love humorous texts. I love them. I love them all because I'm a big Jane Austen, you know, Oscar Wilde nerd as well. So just read everything, yeah. I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. That was some of the first stuff that I read as a kid. I was a huge Oscar Wilde fan.
Oh, really? Peter Dorian Gray, I love it so much. And Oscar Wilde just has the best quotes, and they still stand the test of time today. Yeah. Now, I mean, a lot of people ask, how do you do this for a living? Because not everyone does. I know a lot of people who they'll either do a little bit of work on the side, or they'll have a full-time job in a day job. It's me currently, plus you do the creative stuff. Mm-hmm. Or I know some people who hit the schools really hard if they're a children's author, much harder if you write for adults. Mm. And there are different ways and different streams of income as a creative, but imagine it's not easy. So how, not you personally, but how can you make a living out of this?
Yeah, look, I think all creatives have a sort of portfolio career of work. Some don't, but most do. Most have got, you know, a few different things that they're doing. For us now, it is a combination of actually the year is very segmented for us now in writing books at the beginning of the year, and then we go and do school visits usually around term three.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been, that's quite sustainable. But what I find really interesting about doing that is that they are like the two opposite things.
Mm.
Yeah. Sitting in your, you know, at your computer in your house, writing stuff and making yourself laugh at your own gags and think about, you know, your work is a very peaceful, you know, it's writing, so it's, you know, it can be like pulling teeth sometimes, but it's peaceful, and you go inside and get lunch when you want and then pick up the kids, and like it's a nice quiet,
yep,
sort of internal way to live. And it is the furthest thing in the entire world from standing in front of 700 screaming children, like happily screaming children, but it really is, like,
yeah.
And a lot of creatives just kind of find that, I don't know, actually there's a couple that don't find it jarring, but for a lot it is because I think to be a writer, to be a creative, you have this weird relationship with sensitivity, because you are sensitive. To be someone who can create, you need to be able to have this semi-permeable self, you know, that can take in experiences,
yeah,
and absorb them and feel them. That's what, you know, that's where you get your ideas from. But you also need to have rhino hide to cope with rejections,
yeah,
and also right. to cope with, you know, these big events and all these eyeballs and all of that kind of stuff is... That's the other side of that experience. So I think that's, I always find that transition quite difficult.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. No, I think so too. And something you said there about creatives being sensitive to the world and having, you know, being able to feel things and have that input. I also find that I speak to a lot of creatives and, you know, myself included, about, you know, anxiety or different sort of mental health issues. And I've actually said, I have no evidence of this. It's completely anecdotal, but it's almost like if you're a creative person somehow, because you are more sensitive, you are often more susceptible to anxiety or different mental health challenges. And I almost think it's kind of part of having a creative brain. Like I said, this is just from conversations I've had with people.
Well, maybe it's a way of dealing with living with that. You know, it's maybe a bit from column A and a bit from column B.
Yeah. I think
there is that sensitivity, and there's a, and that's something that I think that gives you a richness in the work that you deal with. Mm. And I think that one of the things I come back to when I have those experiences is I always think about the end reader or the kid that's, you know, and I try and ground myself in the fact that there is a little person at the end of this story reading it. And that means something to me.
Yeah.
To give that experience. And it might be in a school visit as well, you know, like if you feel really overwhelmed by that, to look down into the front row and you just see like this 7-year-old kid going, oh my goodness. And for them, it's a really very big moment. And that's a privilege to have that, to be able to speak to them and impact their little lives. So I think sometimes coming back to the simple stuff is really important. The other thing that I do to make it manageable is remind myself that it is at, like, lower the bar, particularly for women. There is this, we've been raised with this idea that you've really got to be very good before you go out and do anything. You've got to be perfect. And it's not a helpful idea. It's really causes a whole lot of trouble. Unwinding that is like a lifetime's work.
Yeah, but unwinding a lot of that stuff, those expectations of women, is hard. You know, like unwinding a lot of that is hard.
Like, you get, and, you know, if you see, you know, we, you know, particularly historically, but, you know, we raise boys to go out, as we should, to go out and give it a go and have a try and fail and fall, and terrific, but you know, women have really suffered from that, you know, get it right, get it all right, and then once it's right you can present it, and then hopefully you didn't stuff it up, and that is so unhelpful. And I started doing was thinking about how many, I mean, you know, particularly in the, if you've worked in an organization, how many boring presentations you have been to in your lifetime.
So many.
You know? PowerPoint presentations that went on and on and on about stuff, and, you know, these company presentations, and that bloke never cared that it was really boring. So I started thinking, you know, maybe it's okay to just have a bad day. You know, maybe it's okay to do that. And I think once you start to go, we'll just lower that bar, then it becomes more manageable.
I think so. I absolutely agree with you. I think the pressure to do everything and be everything is quite real, you know, and I think I've been trying to shed a lot of that and say, you know, I do a lot of things and my kids are happy, and that should be sort of, if that's all I can do today, that's all I can do today. And so I'm trying to just been giving myself a break. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about that whole living up to this weird expectation. Like, I actually really dislike the idea of, oh, women can have it all, you're superwoman, because no, like, it's just such an unrealistic expectation that you can actually do everything and you not want to, you know, die of exhaustion at the end of the day. Like, we shouldn't be expected to be superwomen. We should just be, you know, expected to just do your best every day and not be so hard on yourself. So that's an unwinding as well for me. And I've been consciously doing that. It's okay that you didn't get everything done today, or that this isn't working at the moment, because all this other stuff is working, and just stop being so hard on yourself.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely important to do that and keep reminding yourself of that. And also to find the fun in it. You know, it's, you know, it isn't always a fun job because it's work. You know, like when people say, oh, it must be so amazing, you know, you're like, well, it's still a job, you know, but at the same time, they're right, because it should still be amazing. Yeah. So
particularly writing for kids, you know, you should be able to find that joy. Yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe not doing your admin. I don't think you have to
love that bit. No, I don't think you have to love that bit. It's like filling your car with petrol. It's the worst job ever.
But I think if you also need to, that not let the perfection take over from the enjoyment.
And creativity
gets in the way of your creative flow.
That's why it's not meant to be perfect. Like, creativity is not meant to be perfect. I don't know where we got that idea from. Like, it's creativity. It's meant to be a bit messy and fun and joyful. That's what's cool about creativity.
Well, that's, I mean, that's one of the big things that I tell kids as well in our school talks, is that perfect is the enemy of awesome. So
it's overrated.
That. And, you know, and I, and particularly if the kids are a bit older, like, I will say, you know, as that, I, Joel doesn't have that, but, you know, that is an expectation that I hold, and that's a thing I always try and remember, that the perfect is the enemy of awesome. Gets in the
Absolutely. I
way of
like
you.
that. Perfect, the enemy of awesome. I'm going to use that too. And I also think for a long time, humor has been held not by women and not for female protagonists. It feels like, there should be a lot of books everywhere, but it feels like a lot of the fun has been, for the boys and for the boy protagonists. So I think I'm really passionate about humor, but also holding space for the girls in that space as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's I remember when we were touring the Alice Tully Jimmy Cook series, and that would be something that would come up a lot. I have this slide where I was putting up all the different characters that were in this genre, and I would say to the kids, "What do all these kids have in common?" And they'd be like, "Oh, they're line drawings. They're funny. They go on and on and on." And usually, it was a girl who'd put up her hand and say, "They're all boys. They're all boys." Exactly. Now, boys are funny, that's true, but girls are hilarious. So where are the girls? So there's definitely more room for hilariousness.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think research that was just done recently, about a year ago, still 2/3 of protagonists in kids' books are boys. Still.
Still.
Yeah. Isn't that
Yeah.
odd? I would not have thought that just by looking at the bookshelves.
Yeah, I suppose it's also what you surround yourself with. Yeah, and I'm thinking about.
It's interesting to know that and have that conversation. I've actually always brought my kids up to just read a book because it's cool. I don't care if the protagonist is a girl or a boy or a frog. I don't care. Just read it.
Yes.
And I think they do that now. I think because I've deliberately not made it a thing and put that off the table, that if it's a cool book, you just read it because all human experiences are interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, with Trilby, that I mean, as a mum of two boys, one of the things I actually set out to do was write a funny girl and also write a book that was very much appealing to boys that had a female protagonist. So it was an adventure book. It was based on historical disasters. There were all of these kind of things. So that and it's lovely when you're presenting this to see boys responding so immediately to it. And kids just like the things that they are attracted to, whether it's history, funny characters. I don't think they're hugely judgmental about
I think
gender.
it's adults
Yeah.
that put
Yeah.
that
Yeah, we do that. I think they're not too bad, actually.
Yeah, I agree because my kids have never had a problem with it. Like my son has never said, "I'm not reading this. It's a girl
Never.
protagonist." He's gone, "What's this about? Okay, cool, I'll read
Yeah,
it."
is it
So,
good? They want to know, is
yeah,
it
is
good?
it good? Is it exciting? Will I like it?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that a lot. I love all of that. I find it really, really interesting. All of that stuff. So, what have you learned about the industry in your prolific career, Kate?
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, it's not, I've only been doing this for, I think, just over 10 years. So
That's
it's
a
in,
long time for
is
newbies
it?
like me.
Well, I hope there's another 10 more because we love doing it. Yeah, look, I think the big thing is you have to follow what it is that you love doing. Don't respond to trends and,
Yeah, I think that's true. Because by the time the trend is there, by the time the book's published 2 years later, the trend's
the
gone.
lead times are so huge. Yeah. You have to write from your heart, from what makes, from what makes you tick. That's the most important thing. And I think get excited about it. I think I don't mind getting disappointed. So I'm quite happy to, like with the goat poster. I'm like, "Oh my goodness, who put up this poster? Oh, it's got nothing to do with you." But I think it's nice to have that moment where you just believed in the wonder of your work, So I don't think there's anything wrong with that kind of magical thinking. You
Having
have
your
to do
back
it when you're writing.
sometimes, having your back. I think we don't do that a lot. And I think, going back to that perfectionism thing, we're always so quick to be critical. And so I've really tried this thing, and it's look, it's really hard, but trying to speak to yourself as you would speak to your partner or your friend. And the way that, like, sometimes I criticize my own work, I never speak like that to anybody, but yet I speak to myself like that. So when
Yeah.
that sort of self-criticism comes out, I was like, hang on, would I speak to my partner like that? Would I speak to my children like that? Would I speak to my best friend like that?
Yeah, particularly during the writing process, I think
Yeah.
that's where you really have to believe
You
in
do.
what's going on. Afterwards, I think that's where I will be. Okay, I've put it down for a bit. I'll go back with a much more critical eye, but I have to believe in it while I'm writing it. And then you'll go back, you'll see all that stuff. You know, the place for perfect is definitely in drafting. So I think there's more room for that criticism then.
And I think it's critical about the work, I think, is still a lot different to being, critical of your abilities and your talent and yourself. I think being critical of the work is good because then you make your work better. But I think you've really got to have that self-belief that even though it's hard and maybe you've run out of ideas or you're stuck or whatever, you've got to back yourself in life, I think. Not always easy.
Give it a go.
Yeah, give it a crack. I mean, that's part of being creative though, right? You're not gonna win all the time.
And you just have to keep getting back up. You know, there are things that we've just believed in, and you know, there's still things I still believe in that haven't found a home, and you know, they'll keep coming back up. They'll change along the way. So yeah, I think that you've got to hold on to the things that you know that
And
you.
just keep creating, I think.
Momentum's super important.
Yeah, I agree. And just keep creating, and not everything's going to work. Like you said, things might take time to find a home, or they might not find their home for a while. But I think just keep creating. I think Shawnee Avery put up a post that said, and I believe this thoroughly, your agent's not coming back to you, just create more work. Your current book's not working, just create more work. Like the answer to everything is just keep creating because you're going to get better. You're going to master your craft. And I reckon if you just write enough and put enough out there, some of it, there's probability, right?
Yeah,
Some of it's got to get picked up.
you should. It's definitely. I mean, look, some people, it that work is just a single piece because they are in this kind of much denser space. But there is, I think, an opportunity within children's to write different things for different age groups. I mean, we've seen our kids grow up. So, I mean, there was a time when writing picture books was inspired by the age of our children, and then that's happened along with graphic novels, and then we learnt those things about those age groups as we went along. So now we continue to write in those age groups, knowing those kids. But I didn't know those kids until we got to that. I knew myself as a kid and what I was like, but it's different when you're with that age group. You
Yeah,
really
it
see the
is.
different things about them.
It's gonna be hard when I don't have my little mini critics around telling me that's not funny enough, Mum. I'm gonna have to find some more 9 and 11 year olds to
Yes.
give me some
Well,
feedback.
Joel and I have to avoid them coming to festivals because we're like the kid up the back has to, don't ask him any questions. You know, that one's ours. Whatever he's got to say is going to be problematic.
I love that. I love that a lot. So, I mean, you could do anything. You could write for anyone. Why do you write for kids?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. Look, the audience is, I mean, we care about writing for kids. I think that's really the first thing. You know, we derive a lot of joy from producing work for kids, and the audience kids' responses to books is magic. You know, whether that's in an author talk where they're responding to you in real time, or whether it's at home, they hold their books very dearly. So that, and they're also open to things that haven't been done before. So, you know, they're open to you being playful. You don't need to stick to a routine or an architecture that's already been set. They're open to those things. So, and to silliness, you know, it's very hard to, I don't know a lot of silly adult books, you know, that's. So those kind of things, and that appeals to us. I mean, we want to write funny, we like writing funny books, and that's the audience that really appreciates that. But I also think that there's an opportunity to create meaning with children's books, that they're it's these are our young readers. These are the ones that grow up on these books to go out and live their lives. So it's, you know, it's a wonderful thing to write for children. And it's a wonderful thing to make them laugh. So it holds a lot. And look, if you write for adults, if you go to a writers' festival, the kids' tent's always going off. And then you just pop over to the other tent where Malcolm Turnbull's talking about his latest book. And everyone's in the audience with a coffee cup. And they're just like, okay, right.
Very
And I think, oh
serious
my God, I'm
business.
going to have a panic attack. The idea of even being in that room just makes me feel anxious. So, I mean, we like the audience.
Take me back to Ross the Bus, where it's
Exactly.
fun.
I love Ross the Bus, and and we like our audience, so it's a joy to spend time with them, and
Yeah,
it's a joy
it
to write
is.
for them.
It is. And I think that's what makes the kidlit community so joyful as well, because you can't not have those sparks of joy if you're writing for kids. I don't think that's possible. And so then when, everyone gets together in the kidlit community, that's why it's so joyful and so positive and so inspiring, I think. I always come away from events or catch-ups with other authors feeling so, grateful to be part of such a community.
Yeah, and also community around the whole country. You know,
Yeah,
no
absolutely.
matter what state you're in, you've got
Yeah.
people that whose work you follow,
Yeah, which
and
is awesome with social media because you couldn't do that without social media. And now it doesn't matter. It's funny, you go to launch, it's like, have we met in person before? It doesn't even matter anymore because if you're engaging with them on social media and you're liking their stuff and you're
know their
commenting
work.
about knowing their work, it doesn't matter where they live and it doesn't matter if you've actually met in person anymore because I think, during that time when we did meet everyone online, it's now just become the norm and it doesn't matter anymore. I love that. I love that connection with people wherever you are. I think that's really cool. We're lucky to have that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do need to stop watching so many food videos about cooking. That's not helping me.
Oh, so you're on the food videos. I'm on the home decorating.
Oh, right. That's your algorithm. Mine is all
Yeah.
food and trips to Japan.
Oh, wow. Something's telling me you need to book some tickets. Oh, God, sorry, it's my pick up my daughter alarm. I'll edit that out. She's at gymnastics.
TikTok.
It's because I don't trust myself to not get distracted
Right.
and forget about her. That was such a fun talk, Kate. I just loved how we've just gone on all these tangents and journeys and just talked about the industry and the community and work and all of that interesting stuff that I think you don't always get to talk about, particularly on a podcast, because sometimes podcasts, you have a little bit of time and you're promoting a book and all that stuff. So it's been really good just to have that space just to talk
Yeah,
about
it was a good
all those
chat.
experiences. Yeah.
So, April 6th at 3 p.m. on Saturday is the launch of Frog Squad.
Fantastic. Well, I hope to see you there.
That would be great. Yeah, if you can, would love to see you there.
I actually think I fly back from Melbourne that day.
We're
It's
doing a lot of flying
like a
up.
bus now. It's just like a bus. So it's
It is.
actually, I force myself to write in the lounge and on the plane so I don't feel like that's a
Oh, so
waste of
you're
time
using the time,
because I have to write in cracks, right? Kids, job, whatever. And so I actually love that time in the lounge and in the plane because it's just no Wi-Fi on the plane, so I cannot get distracted. And it's just I have to write. And I get a lot done in that sort of 2 hour space of waiting and jumping on the plane. So
I don't get anything done on the airplanes because I'm just busy having a panic attack. So that's not happening for me, but I'm
I
glad that
feel
that's
you.
happening for you.
I feel you, yes. But because I do it so often now, I'm just like, I tell myself, this is just a bus. You're fine. Just do some writing.
All of that is true.
Yeah.
It is, yes.
Well, but as I well know, anxiety has no common sense.
Yeah, it's not logical.
Doesn't listen to reason and what I've recently figured out. And also it doesn't necessarily have a trigger. Isn't that a joy? Just happens sometimes. And that's it. Because I spoke to my counselor about I'm always looking for the trigger. And he's like, well, sometimes there's no trigger. I'm like, oh, that's sort of it's liberating in one way, but it's frustrating in another. Because you can't avoid it sometimes. It's just gonna land on you. So
Just have to manage it.
yes. And I think it's
Friend for
that's
life.
Yeah, well, that's the other revelation I had because, being the optimist that I am, I was like, okay, how do we get rid of this? Sorry, mate.
There's no getting rid.
No, it's just your frenemy forever. So that was also very liberating, the no trigger, and it's your frenemy forever. And so they're things that have really sort of enlightened me about having anxiety, as I'm sure you can relate. And it's just, well, That's a part of who I am. I remember still recording. I think this is interesting, Kate. I remember saying to my partner, because I was having a panic attack, I said, "I'm really sorry. I'd like to say it's never going to happen again, but that's not true." Because it's going to. So it's just about owning that. And again, finding that humor in, those really tough times
Yeah,
where you
that's
think,
important.
oh, I just want to get out of my body, So, but part and parcel with creativity, I think, Kate.
Yeah, there's probably truth.
Some truth to that, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it has been a joy to talk to you, and I look forward to catching up with you in a few weeks to celebrate Frog Squash.
Yes, that would be so nice. Thanks, Danny. It was really great chatting to you too.
Ingrid Laguna is a multi-award-winning novelist and educator. Her books include Bailey Finch Takes a Stand, one of my favorites, Sunflower, Songbird, and Kit and Arlo Find a Way. Ingrid, you also have a new writing course, Writing with Ink. Tell me all about this.
Writing with ink. Ink is actually my nickname. And so what I think will work is small classes. And what I think will work is genuine feedback from myself and from the other people's writing peers during the course. I wanted to share the things that I find to be really critical in writing, and that is that it's really hard to finish. It's really hard to persevere when the going gets tough. But all of these things can be done. And I think that if you know these things are important, and you know that it's normal to have self-doubt, and you know that it's normal that even though your idea might be inspired at the start, you are going to hit a point, most likely, that it doesn't feel inspired anymore.
Signing up, ingridlaguna.com, and be ready for those courses. Thank you so much, Ingrid, for putting this writing course on for writers.
Thanks so much for having me, Danny B. It's always such a pleasure. I love you.